to Straight Talk with MJ. I'm your host, Michelle Jeanette, and this episode I am coming to you from the great state of Texas. I am here with my husband. He's working here. There was a hailstorm, so I travel with him when he works, and if you hear strange noises like the air conditioner or maybe some typing on a keyboard, it's because we're in one room and he's just on the opposite side of the desk working with his headphones in. So we have to be flexible. This is fun. So I've got the podcast on the road in the great state of Texas. I love Texas. I've lived here 3 different times when my dad was in the military. So I'm a proud Army brat. Today's topic, I couldn't decide on the actual title. It's either something like, what is the boiling point, or how much will you take? How much is too much? When will we start? At what point do we start to push back? I've started to see some of this, which is awesome. And I'm going to point out a couple of those incidents here in a few minutes. But my topic was broad, and it started off with, there are a lot of things, obviously, we've seen in the news, it's going on. But I'm kind of going to narrow it down at the end to education. And there's a whole lot to be said about this, but I'm just going to point out a couple of highlights. And hopefully we'll stick to the 30-40 minute time frame, hopefully. And of course, always end with something with history. And today's, I'm going to read a little bit of a story out of the book From Wall Builders, The American Story. And it does have to do with education, so it's pretty cool. So basically, you know, you're looking around the news and you see things like everything coming at all different angles at the same time. Just, it's almost like it's not Republican and Democrat anymore. It's not Republican versus Democrat. It is literally those who love America versus those who absolutely hate her and want to destroy her. That's literally the kind of battle, the battle that we are in. And so you see this played out in different ways. You see it in Portland, for instance. Night upon night, anarchy in Portland. Burning police precincts, government buildings. People now, they're pulling people out of their cars and they're beating them up. Antifa and BLM. They're beating them up, severely beating them up. Terrible. It's happening in a lot of different places. It even happened here in Texas, where they're standing just a little ways, maybe an hour from here, and they, BLM was standing in the street blocking traffic. And, you know, why are they allowed to keep doing that? You know, peacefully assemble. First Amendment right to peacefully assemble does not mean you have the right to go and block traffic. That's not the same thing. We see it with this whole COVID issue in all the different states, and how the heavy hand of, depending on which state you're in, the heavy handedness of the different governments, the state governors, cities, school boards, all the way down to school boards. It's almost like they had this taste of power. And it was like, whoa, they love this control and this power. And so they kept going with it, and it just kept going and going. And people are starting to push back. It's like, enough already. And it took a little while, but people are starting to read the truth about what all this COVID is, and the just the tyrannical mandates that are coming down. We went from flatten the curve in 2 weeks to show me your papers in less than a year, right? What happened to America and freedom? What happened to liberty? So you have things like in Washington state, the governor orders churches, sporting events to have separate sections, vaccinated, non-vaccinated. Yankee Stadium, you have vaccinated section, non-vaccinated section, and they're offering vaccines if you come to the game. Yay! Media, of course, and big tech have been suppressing the truth of highly reputable doctors that have been looked at for decades for their work and admired, had papers published, just revered by their peers. And then they come out and they say, wait a minute, what's in this vaccine? I don't think it's good. And then all of a sudden they're evil, they're bad, and they have to be removed from any kind of social media. And so people are not getting the whole picture. They're not getting the whole truth in order to make informed decisions. They're not allowed to hear the truth. Thank you, big tech and media. Then you have the whole thing with this, all of the Biden regime coming left and right with all these really anti-American, anti-freedom, liberty policies that are just made to destroy America. The open borders, he's shipping the illegals, he's putting them in all the different towns. So every town now is a border town. Just while I was doing some research, they're renovating some old building in Greensboro, North Carolina, to house 800 illegal minors. And most of those are not babies, okay? These are like teenagers. So they're putting them everywhere, okay? So that whole issue is another issue. So basically, it's coming left and right. The one thing that really scared me, not, I say scared because I'm not like, oh my gosh, I'm scared. That's not what I mean. It highly concerns me, especially as an Army brat. There is this whole push to purge the military of patriotism, patriotic people, the volunteers that go into the military. My father served 23 years. My father-in-law was a career and retired 20-something years, Special Forces. My brother-in-law, my niece, my nephew, so many people. We know family, you know, friends, still have friends. People we know in the military, people that we know have been retired and are veterans. And now what they're trying to do is purge the military of patriotism. And I want to read something to you that should really shock you and should wake you up. And I'm going to link this article in the, obviously in the website when I post the podcast. But this is the new guy that they're hired at the Pentagon to basically, he's going to be the senior advisor to the Secretary of Defense for Diversity and Inclusion. His name is Bishop Garrison. He is extremely radical, Black Lives Matter proponent, critical race theory proponent. I'm going to talk about that in a second. He hates anything America First. He hated Trump. He hates everybody that was there in the Capitol on January 6th. And here is their new definition of extremism. They're trying to rid the military of extremism. When my dad was in the military for 23 years, we didn't have, like, extremism. It got rooted out really fast at the beginning. If somebody signed up, normally it was rooted out in boot camp, or, you know, people just had their eye open for that kind of thing and they said something. But it was not the same definition of extremism as it is now. Here is their definition of one part of it. Patriot extremism. Core belief. This ideology holds that the U.S. government has become corrupt, has overstepped its constitutional boundaries, and or is no longer capable of protecting the people against foreign threats. Some elements have formed militias and openly advocate for the violent overthrow of the current U.S. government. Okay, so they put the militia and the violent overthrow of the U.S. government in one sentence, and that is totally just misconstruing everything that a militia is. And I probably need to do a whole episode on the actual definition of militia and what it is and what it is in the Constitution. It is in the Constitution. But the point is, they're trying to vet the military. And if you don't have, you know, when I grew up in the military, it was probably 60-70% people were conservative. I mean, they love their country. And they're trying to get rid of people that love their country, basically, is what they're trying to do out of the military. So how do they get by with this? How do they get in charge? Who are these people now that are running all of this white supremacy, patriot extremism? What are they doing, and how is it getting into our education? Basically, it's our education system and what they're teaching our kids. So if you've heard of the latest thing, I guess, in the last couple of years, but really has exploded in the forefront since the Biden regime took over, is the critical race theory. And I have a couple of excerpts from different articles that I'm just going to highlight, because there's different ways that they explain what critical race theory is. And also at the same time, because I'm taking a Constitution class, the history of America, my eyes are being open to what our country was really like and what they're trying to tell you it was like. They're changing it. So this is out of the Tennessee Star. Of course, I'm from Tennessee, so it's a great source if you're from Tennessee. The Tennessee Star, they have really good articles. And this one has to do with, in Williamson County school system, they're trying to do critical race theory. And Tennessee Stands is a group that's against that. And the spokesman, Gary Humble, talked to the superintendent of that county last week, and basically saying that, you know, he really got onto that superintendent for promoting evil and godless policies, okay? Basically, it's Marxist, which is Marxism gets rid of God and replaces it with the state. And so here is what he described as critical race theory. CRT is the abbreviation. CRT is an ideology born out of the teachings of Karl Marx that says race and power are the keys to understanding American society. Instead of defining everyone by class like Marx did, CRT defines everyone by race, the essence of racism, by the way, and sexual identity, and says that if you are white and heterosexual, you are part of the oppressor class, no matter if you are a poor white male living in near poverty. Just the fact that you're born white means you're the oppressor. That in itself is racism. So, it says, if you are of non-white skin color or non-heterosexual identity, you are part of the oppressed class. Even if you're a tenured African-American professor at an elite university making 6+ figures, you're oppressed. CRT says that all of American life, social structures, justice, political and economic systems, education, and religion are founded upon race and race alone. As a result, everything in America is inherently and systemically racist. And this also goes along with the 1619 project that they're trying to push as curriculum into our schools, and they have done so in some of these bigger cities. It's teaching kids that America is evil, was founded on the backs of slaves, and that is absolutely false. Absolutely false. Now, going through the class and the studies that I've learned and the books that I'm reading about history, America is not perfect. We've never claimed that it was, but I'm going to what I've learned recently about slavery and what I've been reading about it is kind of eye-opening. In the day that America was, the 1770s, the whole world, especially with the British Empire, the whole world was all about, you know, everywhere in the world there was slavery, everywhere. It wasn't just an American thing. It was something forced upon the colonies by the king, by the British Empire. And numerous founding fathers were against it. They spoke out against it, and the king kept pushing it. And so America is not inherently racist, and that's a false thing that they're trying to teach our kids. Another thing that explains this, let's see if I can find where it is here. It's basically, even in the workplace, they're trying to push this critical race theory in everything. And it's a quasi-Marxist theory that has been heavily promulgated throughout academia, entertainment, government, schools, and the workplace in recent years, and rose to new prominence following the rise of the far-left groups such as Antifa and Black Lives Matter. Some workplaces have included concepts from the doctrine in their racial and cultural sensitivity training, which essentially teaches employees that the U.S. is fundamentally racist, or that one race is inherently superior to another. So this article is out of the Epoch Times. It says critical race theory training in the workplace could lead to increased bullying, anxiety, experts. Imagine what if that's going to do that to the adults, imagine what that's going to do to kids. If they're being taught in class that they're bad because they're born with a certain skin color, then we certainly don't want that to be taught about Black people or Asian people or, Hispanic people. That would never be allowed to be taught, that because your skin is a color that's brown or black or, whatever it is, that's not white, that you're bad, that you're the oppressor. We would not allow that to be taught. So why are we allowing this to be taught? So kids are learning that they're bad. What do you think that sets it? If it sets up for bullying in the workplace, what do you think it's going to do in school? Yeah. So here's another, where did it go? Let me find my article here. So here's what's happening. The Erickson, this is from the National Pulse, and I highly recommend them. This is from an article that they did called "A Top U.S. Teacher Training Organization is Partnered with a Chinese Communist Group Promoting Socialist Nursery Rhymes." This is dated May 3rd. The Erickson Institute, one of America's premier graduate schools training teachers and influencing classroom curricula, is engaged in a long-term cooperative relationship with a Chinese Communist Party group overseeing the regime's Communist Youth League and publishing books including nursery rhymes embodying the core values of socialism and magazines praising Xi Jinping and Karl Marx. So this is what they're going to be teaching your kids. This is what they're pushing to teach your kids in school. The teachers, they're training teachers on how to teach your kids socialist values. Let's see. There's another one where it explains critical race theory. Okay. This is really good. Now, I have been taking a Constitution class. I've been hosting a Constitution class, and I probably will do another one after that. So if you're interested, shoot me an email, michelle@straighttalkwithmj.net, and that's 2 T's with straight talk. And I can get you signed up for the next class. I'm not sure when that is, but I've been learning a lot from wallbuilders.com. Rick Green, who is one of the, he used to be a Texas legislator, and he teaches with the Patriot Academy with the Constitution classes. And he interviewed Dean Michelle Bachmann. She used to be senator from Minnesota. And so they're talking about critical race theory. And I want you to hear her explanation of what is going on, what they're trying to push in these schools. And listen to her, what she has to say here.
Hey, well, I was wanting to talk to you about this whole Minnesota social studies thing. We're seeing this across the country, but of course your home state of Minnesota, it looks like the social studies standards, man, they are really going after this whole racial divide thing and getting this, even fifth graders and fourth graders talking about that, and really dividing our people, I think, instead of uniting us. What do you think about these new standards, and can they be stopped?
Well, Rick, they're terrible, and I'm so thankful that you brought it up. Our state is run pretty much, we're a one-party state, a Democrat state, and our governor said that he wants to advance critical race theory through our children's social studies classes. He wanted to get rid of traditional social studies, and instead he wanted to replace it with critical race theory. Well, I'm sure that you've well educated your audience on what that is, and actually it's teaching Marxism through race. Marx taught his idea of Marxism through the oppressed and oppressor through economics and class warfare. It's the same exact thing that Marx did, only now they just use the area of race, and that one people group are the oppressed, the other are the oppressor. And so in Minnesota, of course, we had the George Floyd tragedy. That case is going on. As many of your listeners may know, we just had another death happen. And so literally, Minneapolis is burning again 5 nights in a row. And all of this is being fomented by the critical race theory that's being taught. And essentially what it says is that whites, it divides the races. We shouldn't be divided by the color of our skin, but it specifically seeks to divide us by the color of our skin and then condemn anyone who's not of the preferred color, which is white. Now whites are considered the oppressors, and the blacks are considered those who've been oppressed. And so it continually creates division, hatred, where none existed before, very little existed before, and now everyone is on edge. And the goal is to seek to keep all people divided and to keep us on edge. It's a recipe for disaster in Minnesota, and anywhere where critical race theory is being taught, it's a recipe for disharmony and societal disintegration.
It's so important for our listeners to know this, because often it's sold in our local communities as just racial sensitivity, cultural, you know, learning about other people that didn't grow up like you, that sort of thing. It always has to, even Biden tried to use that, and even Chris Wallace in the debates with Trump, whenever Trump was saying,
well,
oh, this is
right.
Bad, this is evil.
Rick, you're right, and it's a lie. It's just the opposite, because people think, oh, it'll be forever in the United States. No other nation did that. We extinguished it, and we went from there to continue to deal with that issue. So to be at this point in 2020 and act like the United States is still a plantation filled with slave masters is just a falsehood, and it's creating a disharmony, especially in communities of color that are horrendous, because it's creating anger and resentment between peoples. And we are not going to move forward with critical race theory being taught to little children who don't have discernment to know that they're being fed a pack of lies as opposed to the truth.
What's the best way to push back, especially not only for Minnesota, this is the state standards that will be adopted, but people that are listening all over the country, it's coming to their local schools if it's not already there. What's the best way for an individual citizen to push back?
Rick, like any other area of consumer consumption, we walk with our feet. And I'm very serious when I say this. I would urge all of your listeners, pull your children out of your local public school. Easier for you to say, you're saying to me. It actually wasn't. We homeschooled our children, and we sent them to private Christian school. It was very hard. We had to make sacrifices, but we decided that our number one goal would be a Christian education for our children. God was very faithful. We were in ministry. We had no money, but God was very faithful to us, and he always made sure that we could make our tuition payments so that our kids could go to Christian school. I will tell you, our children are now 40 years of age. I wouldn't have changed one thing about that decision. Our children are in a completely different place now because of that decision. We are so grateful for God's faithfulness. I would encourage people, trust God with your child's education, whether it's homeschool or Christian school. It is so worth it, because one day we'll all have to answer to the Lord for how we reared our children. And I'm telling you, that is the greatest investment that you will make in the next generation and five generations down the road. because Paul says to Timothy, faithfully transfer the gospel of truth. That's the best way we can do it, by ensuring that our children have an education that is based upon godly principles.
So, that was awesome. She's right. Our education based on godly principles. I want to show you just a couple more clips, or let you listen to a couple more clips of parents that are actually finally, they're standing up. They've had enough. Now, this one video clip is of a mom talking about the mask mandates for children. Little children, elementary school children, having to go to class 7 hours a day with their masks on. There was another video, I couldn't find it, of the mom was talking about how it was physically affecting her child, physical ailments. She was getting skin problems, health problems, from breathing in, with her mask on all day. And it is pure, pretty much control, tyranny, politics, whatever you want to call it, that our kids are the least likely to be affected, and they're being punished basically for this. So I want you to hear this, mom. It's powerful. This is a mom out of Georgia.
Every month I come here and I hear the same thing. Social emotional health. If you truly mean that, you would end the mask requirement tonight. Tonight. This is not March 2020 anymore. We have 3 vaccines. Every adult in the state of Georgia that wants that vaccine is eligible to get it right now. And every one of us knows that young children are not affected by this virus. They're not. And that's a blessing. But as the adults, what have we done with that blessing? We've shoved it to the side and we've said, we don't care. You're still gonna wear a mask on your face every day, 5 and 6 year olds. You still can't play together on the playground like normal children, 7 and 8 year olds. We don't care. We're still going to force you to carry a burden that was never yours to carry. Shame on us. My 6-year-old looks at me every month before I come here and she says, are you gonna tell them tonight? Tell them I don't wanna wear this anymore. And I say, baby, it's not time to fight that battle yet. I try to explain that there's so many things, but it's April 15th, 2021, and it's time. Take these masks off of my child.
Ooh, that's a mama. And this is Mother's Day. And I meant to start off with that, Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to everybody. But this is a call to moms, to parents, to this is your God-given duty to raise your children. And part of that is their education. That's our responsibility. And we've just become accustomed to giving them over to the school system and letting the school educate them and raise them, and handed over our, pretty much given them our mandate to raise our children. We've given it over to them. It's time to take that back. Like, she is standing up for her child. So many other parents are doing that. They did it in Arizona. They tried to go to a school board. A bunch of parents, hundreds of parents, showed up, and the school board left because they didn't want to face the parents and talk about removing the mask mandate on the children. This is going on all over. So that's good. That's the good news, that parents are standing up. And here is a great article about that in, I believe it was Texas. Okay, yes, here it is. Critical race theory received a stunning rebuke at the polls in local Texas elections last week in the suburb of Dallas. This is in the Daily Signal. And it says, on one side, progressives argued that curriculum and disciplinary changes were needed to make all children feel safe and welcome. A mostly white but quickly diversifying school district. On the other, conservatives in Southlake rejected the school diversity plan as an effort to indoctrinate students with a far-left ideology that, according to some, would institutionalize discrimination against white children and those with conservative Christian values. Guess what? 70% of the vote went against a whole slate of candidates, from the mayor's race to school board and city council, who supported a diversity plan that pushed critical theory on students and faculty, and the turnout for the election was high. I just learned in my class, Constitution class, I was shocked. And Rick Green was talking, and he was saying, talking about school boards. Currently, in city and school board elections, only 3 to 6% of Americans show up to vote. That was astonishing. So, basically, these parents took it in their own hands. It's their responsibility. Their children's education is their response. It's your responsibility as a parent for your child's education. So, when you give it over to the school system, there are, you know, we are in charge. We, the people, we elect these people. So, they have to answer to us. Okay? We elect them. They answer to those people that who elected them. They don't get to go off and do their own thing and become dictators or tyrants. Okay, so the parents, 70% of these people voted against critical race theory in this school district. This is what's going to have to take. And I found a fabulous article because it's going to take, there has to be action. And if you watch Steve Bannon with War Room, he's all about telling people to do action. And I am learning more and more about the Constitution, and I think part of the reason we don't act is we don't know. We've not been taught what our responsibility is and what our rights are. We haven't been taught that. So that's one of the reasons I'm learning this Constitution class and hosting it. And so I've found this really great article that talks about what you can do to fight this, and there's a couple of different steps. The first step is understand what and who you're fighting. So the critical race theory talks about the plan that the school board wanted to put in place was under the guise of diversity and inclusion training, and they had to enroll in order to graduate. All right, so that was almost, it was mandating you to take classes that told you you're bad if you were white. That's basically what it is. So the parents stood up. Southlake parents recognized the danger masquerading as education and clearly articulated their objections based on the publicized facts of the plan. So they educated themselves on what was going on, and that way they could step up, understand who they were fighting. Secondly, they gathered numbers. They got more parents. Okay, one parent is easily attacked. Because here's what happened. Several groups began a public bullying campaign to coerce community members into supporting this critical race theory curriculum, or else have their characters impugned. And they actually sent out mailers to every household, naming and smearing private citizen parents for speaking out. This was actively bullying parents, doxing parents. So you've got to get numbers. You've got to get more parents in groups. Numbers are better. And organize. The third step was to organize the parents. Several Southlake parents created a political action committee to raise money and endorse candidates, you know, local school board candidates. So, you know, get to know your neighbor. The fourth step was demand answers. They filed public information requests to discover that several board members may have violated Texas's Open Meetings Act. One parent filed suit. The district attorney convened a grand jury and indicted two of the school board members. So get to know what's going on and demand answers. The fifth one step is to reach out. Do outreach. Their candidates ran civil campaigns, focused on the issues, and held weekly events. So you got your name out there, what you were doing, and more people were involved and more people would vote. We've got to get more than 3 or 6% of people voting on the school board. This is highly critical because they're teaching our kids. We need to know what they're teaching them. So when I was studying in the class, this is a little bit about the history. So I'm going to move from that because it's all about encouraging. I mean, I know there's moms out there that are mama bears. And since this is Mother's Day, I am challenging you to be a mama bear. Take, you know, charge of your child's education. If you can't homeschool or send them to Christian school, get involved. And I know we work, and I know we are tired at the end of the day, but this is so critically important because we're at a point in our country that if we don't start acting, if we just get swallowed up by the day's activities of trying to, you know, work and live, it's going to be too late. We're going to lose it. We're going to lose the freedom and liberty that we have. It is quickly approaching that point, faster than any of us thought in the last 100 so days. Once this regime took over, it has gone downhill fast. I mean, they're going after your guns, literally going after your guns, your freedom of speech. They're spying on Americans. The Biden regime wants to hire third-party outside sources to, to spy on your social media. Using the post office to spy on your social media? The post office! Holy cow, it's just a whole bunch of things that they're doing. So really one thing that I learned in this class had to do with education. And I was like, what? So Dr. Benjamin Rush, one of the founding fathers, here's what he said. Patriotism is as much a virtue as justice, and is as necessary for the support of societies as natural affection is for the support of families. The love of country is both a moral and a religious duty, a social, moral, and religious duty. It comprehends not only the love of our neighbors, but of millions of our fellow creatures, not only of the present, but of future generations. So this is for future generations. He established public schools, Dr. Benjamin Rush. Here is what he said, that public schools had three purposes: to teach students to love and serve God, to teach students to love and serve their country, and to teach students to love and serve their families. And I found this interesting. Dr. Rush put country before family because he understood that if we ever lost control of our country, it would become the great enemy of our families. Boy, are we seeing that now. Wow. So this history part is that, but also from the American story. I want to encourage you because I want you to understand what it's supposed to be, what America is supposed to be, what our education system is supposed to be, what it's not now. It is so far from that now, and it's up to us to step up and take action. We have to be the mama bears and go in and protect our kids. Be that mama bear to tell the teachers and those in charge that we put them there. We can vote them out, right? So early American education, this is the book out of from Wall Builders, The American Story, The Beginnings, written by David Barton and his son Tim Barton. And I interviewed Tim Barton last summer. If you want to hear that podcast, it's on my website, straighttalkwithmj.net. So if people made the laws and churches made the people, it was education that helped shape them both. New England's educational philosophy stemmed from the belief that every person should be able to read the Bible for himself. Remember now, they were coming out of a society for the last couple hundred years before that, in the early, when the pilgrims came over, they were coming from a place where they weren't allowed to read the Bible. The Bible was pretty much in the hands of the tyrannical church leaders who were telling the people what was in the Bible. They would, interpret the scriptures for them and tell them their people what they said was in the Bible, but the people couldn't read it for themselves. And so the first Bible that came over was very first Bible ever printed, the Geneva Bible. It was pretty awesome. So they're coming out of a place where, if you could read, you could be, you could hold your leaders accountable. That's why they didn't want them to be able to read. So this is why they said education was important, to be able to read. With this policy of education for all citizens, America quickly showed itself to be very different from the European nations of that day. Even though at this period in history it was far more common to formally educate boys than girls, female literacy in New England far exceeded female literacy in any other country. Many children were taught at home, and in 1642, the General Court of Massachusetts, that's the legislature, expanded education by enacting the first public education law in the nation. It required that all children, boys and girls, receive an education and be taught the principles of what? What do you think it was? It was religion. The principles of religion. That law also started public, or what they call common, schools. So 5 years later, in 1647, the law affirmed that a general education was necessary because it was the, quote, one chief project of that old deluder Satan to keep men from the knowledge of the scripture, end quote. That is, Satan wanted to keep people from being able to read and thus from knowing the Bible. Isn't that awesome? That's the beginnings of our country here. Notice the reason, let's see, some citizens still could not read and thereby were incapable to read the Holy Word of God or the good laws of the colony. That's why they wanted everybody to learn to read. Because illiterate citizens could not read and judge the laws of the colony against the Bible, civil leaders might pass evil laws without any opposition from the people, which would allow the rise of both tyrannical and oppressive leaders and policies. So they actually had a law in 1690 that there are many persons unable to read the English tongue and thereby incapable to read the Holy Word of God or the good laws of this colony, and it ordered that all parents and masters shall call their respective children and servants as they are capable to be taught and read the English tongue. So, and remember also, just as a little side note about the issue of slavery, there were hundreds and thousands of people that came over as indentured servants, single moms or widows who had no money, but they came over and worked for 7 years for somebody to earn their freedom. So somebody would pay for them to come over. They'd work for them for 7 years to earn their freedom. So this was the atmosphere, the environment, of the social environment that was going on. It was everywhere, okay? That was a side note to that. The education laws were a direct response to the horrific persecutions that so many of the early settlers had personally experienced in Europe at the hands of leaders in both state and church who did not know the Bible's teachings, which produce a limited and restrained government. Okay? With New England's strong emphasis on reading the Bible, the resulting educational approach was so successful that John Adams reported that a native of America who cannot read and write is as rare as a comet or an earthquake. So that's good. That was very important. Early textbooks in American education, and I have a copy of a primer, and according to famous English educational philosopher John Locke, students in that day learned to read by following the ordinary road of the hornbook, primer, psalter, testament, and Bible. So the hornbook was a flat piece of wood with a handle that had a sheet of paper, printed paper, attached, covered with a thin transparent layer of animal horn to protect it. A typical hornbook had the alphabet, the vowels, a list of syllables, the acknowledgement of the Christian Trinity, and the Lord's Prayer. And it talks about the New England primer, and in the primer it was equivalent to a first grade textbook. It remained a standard text from which American students learned to read up through the beginning of the 20th century. Boy, we have come a long way from that, haven't we? I could go on more and more and more, but I'm already out of time for today, so we'll have to continue that another time. But that is your history. American education, even its colleges and universities, so many of them, Harvard, William & Mary, Yale, Princeton, University of Pennsylvania, Columbia, Dartmouth, all of these other schools started out and had foundations in Christian principles and the Bible. And boy, we have lost them. We have lost the education. We are teaching our kids to hate America. So, I admonish you, I challenge you as moms, as parents, to get to that school board, to vote people in, go show up, vote for the school board. Find out what they're teaching your child. Make sure it's something that's pro-America, teaches the true history, but teaches that America is in a unique place, that because of the liberty and the God-given rights that we esteem in the Constitution and the Declaration, Bill of Rights and the Federalist Papers and all that, that there's no other place that you can have this liberty to be free to be what God made you to be. And it was all grounded in the Bible. It's fascinating stuff. I encourage you to take a class with me. I think you would love it. You'll find out a whole lot of stuff. That was my husband's phone. That's the fun of recording in one room in a hotel while you're working in Texas. Thanks for listening today. Follow me at straighttalkwithmj.net. I'm also on Gab, G-A-B, under Straight Talk with MJ. And you can find me there. I post a lot of things there. And you can follow me on Telegram, Straight Talk with MJ, again, on Telegram. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk again soon.
God bless.
Happy Mother's Day.